read the book.
You're such a good interviewer, my gosh.
You really made me think. You really read the book.
Yeah. No other interviewer has really gotten into that. You really brought out some really great points.
Greg Berg holds the morning show weekdays after the 8 o'clock news, only on WGTD. Jennifer Schiaverini, author of Fates and Traitors, a novel of John Wilkes Booth and Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker, will be in Kenosha at the Public Library's Northside Branch Wednesday evening, September 28th. The public is invited. Details at boswellbooks.com, a supporter of WGTD.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Kenosha Professional Police Association Shop with a Cop program is seeking cash donations. Checks can be made out to the KPPA with Shop with a Cop in the memo line. Address is 1000 55th Street, Kenosha, 53140.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and our topic today is you and Neighborhood Watch and other crime prevention activities. And although we're going to be talking about Kenosha primarily, because we have guests here from the Kenosha Police Department, Neighborhood Watch and these crime prevention tips that we're going to be talking about really apply almost universally. My guests this morning from the Kenosha Police Department are Officers Jeff Wambolt and Ron Francis. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Now, you're both affiliated with the crime prevention programs of the Kenosha Police Department and particularly Neighborhood Watch. I think you both operate out of the downtown Kenosha Rotary Safety Center. Is that right?
No, we are affiliated with the crime prevention unit. However, our office has moved from the Rotary Safety Center to the Boys and Girls Club, located on 52nd Street and 14th Avenue.
So you're still neighborhood-based?
Still neighborhood-based, correct.
That's great. Gentlemen, why don't we begin by illustration of why what you do in terms of crime prevention is so important. Can you tell me a story about why this is important and the kind of work that you help people with?
Well, crime prevention is important. One of the things Ron and I do is educate the public. So, for example, we like to talk about something from the broken windows theory that I like to say. The phrase is, small things matter. Mm-hmm. And here's a great illustration. Several years ago, on the east side of Kenosha, there was an elderly woman who lived alone in a home that her husband had built for her. He had since passed, and one beautiful summer afternoon, similar to how today's weather is, she was enjoying a cup of tea in her living room. All her windows were open, the doors were open, allowing for a nice breeze to come through. Well, when she goes and takes a sip of her tea, in through the front door walks a large man. And he proceeds to go to her television, and he's going to steal her television set. Well, you can imagine what this poor woman went through. She's about 85 years old, seeing this large man walk through her front door, startled her practically to death. As soon as she got her wits about her, she tried to stop him from stealing her television set. Well, as soon as she gets up to stop him, he knocks her to the ground, this 85-year-old woman. Then she crawls over to her phone. She's going to call 911. He beats her to the phone, slaps the phone out of her hand, knocks her back down again, and then proceeds to take the television and walk out the door. Now, in that terrible scenario, there was something that woman could have done that could have prevented this whole incident from happening, believe it or not. Now, it's not her fault, but what do you think that was? Any idea?
Secure the house better?
Yep, secure the house better. She could have locked that screen door. Now, people don't think about that. But that's one of the many, many tips Ron and I offer the public in our education programs. But had that woman, again, no fault of her own, locked that screen door and the man tried to get in, we all know what the sound of a door is when someone pulls on it and it doesn't open. There's that, you know, that banging sound. Well, that may have startled her enough to realize something was wrong. She could have called 911 before he got in. Or maybe the noise itself would have scared him away. Or could he have put his fist through the screen? Yes, and then unlocked the door. But that may have bought her enough time to call 911. But something as simple as flipping a lock down to lock the door could have prevented a tragedy from occurring to her.
So it's both it's a tactical thing, but it's also a strategy in the longer term,
correct,
in the broader view of how you think about making yourself safe in the eventualities of that sort.
We call it making yourself a hard target. We want you to make yourself and your property what we call a hard target. The bad guys are lazy. Let's face it. If they weren't lazy, they'd be out getting a job instead of committing crimes to support themselves. So if we can make it as hard for them as possible, that's how you make yourself safe. So in other words, if you're walking down the street, you know, you come across somebody on the street, make eye contact with that person. Make them understand that you know who they are. You can identify them now. And that makes yourself a hard target. And there's millions of different ways of doing that. Like Jeff said, just lock the screen door makes yourself a harder target than leaving that door unlocked.
Officer Francis, you say that looking at people and letting them know that you know they're around, and I suppose that means looking over your shoulder once in a while as well, perhaps.
Well, common sense and awareness are the two key things. If you have common sense and you're aware of your surroundings at all times, you're going to be safe 95% of the time. Did you ever go into the old Blockbusters, Len, when there used to be video stores?
That's right, yes.
Whenever you walked into a Blockbuster store, no matter where that clerk was, they yelled, "Hey, hello, how you doing?"
That's
you,
right.
You could be looking around. Where's this clerk at? Were they just being polite? No. They were letting you know that they knew you were in the store. A better example maybe from today is ever go into the Lowe's home repair store out on 31.
Always greeted.
What's the first thing in that? There's a big camera. You get to see yourself walking in because there's a camera and a television set there. Is that just a play toy that they want to amuse their customers with? No. They want to let you know that you're being monitored when you walk in there. So when you walk down the street and you make eye contact with somebody, you're doing the exact same thing that those two businesses were doing. You're saying, listen, I know you're there, and I know what you look like now. So maybe it's not a good idea to commit a crime against me.
Officer Wembolt, picking up what Officer Francis is talking about, we all walk around with earbuds in our ears now, looking at our smartphones or something, whatever it might be, Pokemon, Go Pokemon. Do you see a problem with that? Have we had problems with that in the community?
A little bit. The one problem I've heard specifically to the Pokemon Go is somebody had their head down looking at their phone and they walked into a fence pole. I've also heard of an incident years ago where a student was crossing Highway 31 texting while they were walking and got hit by a car. So to Ron's point about common sense and awareness, that's the awareness part. If your head is buried in your cell phone and you're not paying attention to your surroundings, I mean, yeah, you can walk into a fence pole, as ridiculous as that sounds, but you also could be a target for someone that wants to victimize you.
And I would imagine that the darker it is in your surroundings, the more likely that that could happen.
Sure. There's three things that we talk about as it relates to what a quote-unquote bad guy doesn't like, and that's light, noise, and groups. So to your point about darkness, yeah, we ask that people keep their homes well-lit, especially on the outside at nighttime. If you're going for a walk, walk in well-lit places. Stay away from side streets. Stay on the main streets. That's where more people are. That's where it's well-lit, et cetera, et cetera.
Let's move on now to some of the details of how that Neighborhood Watch program works. Officers Wembolt and Francis have been associated with this program for quite some time, haven't you, gentlemen?
Yeah, what has it been around? At least 10 years maybe now?
And you have neighborhood watch meetings in the neighborhoods. You train people to be watch captains. You alert people to crime prevention and crime safety. Could you tell us just a little bit about how that neighborhood watch program works? Let's suppose you're in a neighborhood that currently doesn't have a neighborhood watch program, and you and maybe some of your neighbors are interested in working with your office to just improve safety, maybe reduce vandalism, make the street feel safer for their kids and themselves.
There's two things with the Neighborhood Watch Program. One, it maintains a neighborhood. So let's say you don't have any issues in your neighborhood. Everything's going fine. Well, great. Start a Neighborhood Watch because we want to keep it that way. And the other thing, and the more popular thing, is that there is an issue going on in the neighborhood, and that's usually when we get contacted by one of the residents that says, listen, we've got this problem, we've got to take care of it. So to start a Neighborhood Watch is simple. You give us a call. We do need somebody to take the lead. It's a volunteer program, so we need one of the residents or a citizen to take the lead. Sometimes it's the alderman or a politician that'll take the lead and get something done. But we need somebody that's going to step up and take the lead to get the neighborhood organized. So what happens is they call us. We explain the program to them. Then we bring them out what we call a packet of information. Usually comes in a blue or red bag, and it's got a bunch of stuff in there. Some of it is just specifically for that person to be able to familiarize themselves with what the program's about, and some of it's for them to start getting some interest going in the neighborhood. Normally, we like about 40 to 50% of the one block or two block area. Again, it's a volunteer program, so if somebody wants to take on a bigger project, that's great. But one of the components of Neighborhood Watch is for the neighbors to be able to look out for each other. So we don't want this program to get too big. It works better on a block-by-block basis.
Officer Francis, that's a very interesting point, and something I wasn't really quite aware of, that your emphasis is on a small area that's relatively compact where people can know each other, because that looking out for each other and knowing who belongs on the block is part of the issue?
Absolutely. There's three components to Neighborhood Watch. One of them is neighbors looking out for each other. The other one is calling the police about any suspicious activity that's going on. And the third one, and probably the most important one, is that we want the neighbors to get to know a little bit about each other. It's not a nosy program. You don't need to know every little detail. But just common sense things like, do they work nights? Do they work days? What kind of car do they drive? And the only reason we want you to know a little bit about each other is so that you can keep an eye on each other. So you can do that first one, look out for each other. And we call that building that sense of community. Because, again, like Jeff said, three things bad guys don't like: light, noise, and groups. So if the bigger the group, the more cohesive the group, you got a bunch of people on a block that are friends, that like each other, that are looking out for each other, the bad guys are not going to move into that neighborhood. Or if they're in that neighborhood, they're going to get the heck out of Dodge quickly because they don't want to be in that type of environment.
Officer Wambolt, how many Neighborhood Watch programs do we have in the city roughly now?
Roughly right now in the city of Kenosha, we have 232 watch groups.
Well,
so that's individual.
Specific. I don't know if that's roughly.
That was specific, wasn't it? Yeah. All right, we have 232. Let's not say roughly. And we have well over 2,000 participants.
Well, that's terrific. Now, when a group is getting to take together, what happens? Do a couple of co-captains get together and call a meeting? How does that work? Do you meet in schools and homes or churches? How do you meet?
It can be all the above. Like Ron described, normally when we start a Neighborhood Watch program, we need at least one person to take the lead. The majority of our watch groups have one block captain, but there are a few that have co-captains. And like Ron said, it's a volunteer program. We'll do it any way that the citizens want this to run according to our parameters that are set originally. So it can be either or.
Now, how would you contact people to what are the methodologies people use to get a meeting together? One or two people just get the initiative to start a Neighborhood Watch for the neighborhood. It's a great idea. How do you reach out? Put door hangers on people's doorknobs? Is that kind of the way
we haven't done that in quite a while because the popularity of the program is at such a level that people contact us. And this might be a good time just to let your listeners know that if they are interested in starting a Neighborhood Watch, they can contact us at the Crime Prevention Unit at our phone number, which is 657-3937. And the 3937 portion, the last four numbers, spell out the word eyes. So it's easy to remember, 657 and the word eyes. Or they can email us at watch@kenoshapolice.com.
That's kenoshapolice.com, watch@kenoshapolice.com.
Watch@kenoshapolice.com.
Now, let's suppose that person A is the captain and he wants to get the neighbors together for a meeting. How would you reach all of your neighbors in the neighborhood? Was that where you would use the door hangers and
personal phone calls? Well, it depends. If you're talking about an original meeting,
yeah,
that's what you're talking
formation,
about.
Formation, yeah. Get people out.
Well, we do, for lack of a better word, advertising. We put it on our Facebook page. Sometimes we write articles for the Kenosha News, word of mouth through our politicians, local aldermen, et cetera, other police officers. We even have the Neighborhood Watch number on the back window of many of our police squads.
I've noticed that.
Right. So people get the word. They get the message. They can call us. So when they call us, then we explain what a Neighborhood Watch program is all about and how to get one started. And Ron touched on that, where we need that leader, which is the block captain. And we give them the information that comes in the packet that Ron described. And they go to their neighbors and express interest in starting a neighborhood watch. And once we get a large percentage, or not a large percentage, actually, maybe 50%, 40%, you know, a handful of people from the neighborhood that want to get involved, then we schedule our first meeting.
And what would a meeting like that entail? What would you do, Officer Francis?
Well, the initial meeting is about an hour long, and it depends on what's going on in the neighborhood and why the watch actually got started. Let's say there's an issue in the neighborhood and they want some attention for that issue. We'd come out after the block captain handed out the information, which we have in trifold little flyers that they hand out. Then there's some invitations that they'll take around to get the initial meeting going. They'll work with us to get the date, the time, and the place all together and try to work it out so that the most neighbors can participate in the meeting. So the first initial meeting, it takes about a half hour to 45 minutes for us. We actually talk to them. And what we do at that initial meeting is we explain what the program is, we explain how it works, and we explain what they can expect from us and what we're going to expect from them. And then once we're done explaining the program and going through our information that we give out to them, then we sit back and they start talking to us. What's going on? Why are we here? What attention do we need? Where do we need to focus and what do we need to do? And that usually takes about an hour. Some meetings may go an hour and a half depending on what the issues are in the neighborhood. And we go from there. Sometimes we'll take off. Jeff and I will take off from that first initial meeting and go start attacking the problem right away. Sometimes it needs some research to be done. We need to check some databases, do some stuff like that before we can actually attack the problem. So that's how the meeting goes.
Now, when a meeting like this occurs, I suppose you get people to volunteer to keep the neighborhood safe by taking certain kinds of actions and being watchful. What is it that you ask the citizens of a neighborhood to do, and how do you support them? Maybe you could take a stab at starting that, Officer Wambolt.
Well, what we ask them to do is be good observers, right? They are to report suspicious activity and criminal behavior. That's all they're supposed to do, and they can do it anonymously. Now, there's more detail that we can go into how sometimes if it's not anonymous, we can take more action than if it is anonymous. But the bottom line is, if you see something, say something. If you think it's suspicious, report it. And the interesting thing is, Ron and I have this little Laurel and Hardy shtick we do where when one of us will bring up the word suspicion to the group, and the other one will say, like, for example, Ron would say, Officer Wambolt, what is suspicious? And I'll say, good question, Officer Francis. And then I'll put it to the audience. What is suspicious? Well, they may say a gang of kids walking down the street with baseball bats, talking about hurting someone. Well, yeah, that's suspicious, all right. But someone might say a barking dog. Could a barking dog be suspicious? Of course it could, because you never know what the dog is barking at. It could be a burglar. Could be that the dog is in need of something or the owner's hurt. You know, so we talk about that, you know, calling about suspicious behavior and reporting criminal activity and how to do it, how to give a good description. And that's what their role is. They don't have to be vigilantes going out on the street chasing someone down. That's not the idea. You just make that phone call and let the police do their job.
So the Neighborhood Watch Program is really crime prevention and crime awareness and being watchful and speaking up and contacting for help when it seems appropriate.
Absolutely. We want them to be the extra eyes and ears for the police department. We have 201 or 202 sworn officers, but if we can increase that number exponentially by having so many other citizen reporters, eyes and ears, we can do a much better job. And it's working. It's shown to work. When we started, I don't think 232 neighborhood watches for a city of Kenosha's size is a great number. But it is a great number considering where we started. We started at 55, so we're growing, and we're still growing. So that is encouraging as far as getting more people involved and taking ownership for their neighborhoods, taking ownership for their cities. That's what we want them to do.
You don't have a concern about people making frivolous calls and reporting things that are trivial?
No, because almost nothing is trivial. And what we say to our watch groups is when we get to the portion about calling 911, for example, we have run into this problem where people don't they hesitate to call 911 because they don't want to be wrong, because they think they will get in trouble if they call 911 and it truly isn't an emergency.
I think everyone has that hesitation.
They do, and it started a long time ago. I don't know where it started or why, but it's not true. If you legitimately think you have a problem that requires an officer immediately, you call 911 or the fire department. Right, 911
is immediate.
Immediate. If you need an officer or fire rescue personnel immediately, you call 911. Now, if you're wrong and it turns out that it wasn't an immediate, you know, in nature, so be it. It's better to call and be wrong than not call when you really truly needed them for something. So we do a lot of preaching about the 911 number and when to call, because the only time you'll get in trouble is if you're making a prank phone call and you're making a joke out of the 911 system.
The bottom line, Lynn, is we want those phone calls, and that's why we don't get too upset about anonymous phone calls. We love when people step up, and we talked about that ownership. I want people to take ownership, and I want them to put their name on that bottom line and sign a complaint, because it makes it easier for me to make an arrest or to try to fix a problem. But the bottom line is make the call. That is the most important thing. Even if you do it anonymously, at least you're giving us a chance to intervene before stuff can get out of hand. Jeff talked about the broken window theory and small things matter. Well, if we can take care of a small problem before it becomes a big problem, I think that's a win-win situation for us. So the bottom line is we want folks to call when they think they need the police.
Now, you have another phone number, too, with seven numbers in it. When do we call the general police number?
Well, that's the 656. Right. That's the non-emergency phone number, 656-1234. And we always preach this as well. Put that to memory. Commit it to memory. Because you will call that number when time is not so much of the essence, like an emergency, but you still may need help within a few minutes.
You've seen vandalism in the neighborhood. There's graffiti on the back of the garage.
Right.
It's not a life and death situation. You report that to the 656-1234 number.
We generally say when something is suspicious but not an emergency, you'll call the 656-1234 number.
But if you see someone falling down on the sidewalk or being assaulted, you'd call 911.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Okay. And we put that to our neighborhood watch group sometimes, especially the new ones. You know, we'll give an example. You see an accident in front of your home, and someone's head hits the windshield, and you see blood. Is that an emergency? Well, yes, you're going to call 911. But what about the 2 or 3-year-old child playing along the curb of a busy street? Is that suspicious, or is that an emergency? And sometimes we'll get people shrugging their shoulders. They're not sure. Well, we're here to say, if you think it's an emergency, you call 911. If you think something's suspicious, you report it to the police, and you're going to call the 656-1234 number.
That's very helpful. Now, in the Neighborhood Watch program, you have a newsletter that keeps people informed, or an electronic newsletter. You keep in touch with your captains in various ways. How are you doing it these days?
Well, originally, when Ron and I took over this program, we had a newsletter that went out.
A real print newsletter, but that was
print
long ago.
Right. We don't do that anymore. Once emails became more prevalent, we stay in touch much more quickly through email and social media.
Now, when people do get in touch with you, whether it's through social media or email or the telephone, do people have a concern about whether anonymous is really anonymous when they call the police department? I think we should address that. That's kind of like the elephant in the room, it seems to me.
The easy answer, Lynn, is yes. And our answer is, yeah, we know who you are. Especially if you call 911, we know where the call came from. Especially if it came from a landline. But what happens is the dispatcher will, the call taker will ask you if you want to give your information. And all you need to do is just decline to give your information.
Now, if you do that, then you will not appear in any official records. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And the other thing is, even if you give your name and you don't want the officer to show up at your house, you started a neighborhood watch, the problem's across the street, we're working on fixing it. You call, but you don't want them to see the officer come walking up your stairs. There's options for you. You can meet the officer in another location. You can talk to the officer on the telephone. These days, you can communicate via text or computer in some fashion. So there's options there to make sure that you remain anonymous. As a normal practice, we don't go around telling our suspects or somebody that we're dealing with who the complainant is, because that's just not
You're smarter than that.
Yeah, we don't need to do that. So the anonymous thing, even though when you call and the phone number comes into the dispatch center, especially if you use a landline, we know where that call is coming from. It's not something that gets passed on.
It's not a public record.
Not something to worry about. It's not a public record.
Okay. I think that's important for people to understand because with the prevalence of various caller IDs and everything today, it's hard for people to believe that they're anonymous. And so we need to know how that's handled. Thank you. Now, there are other programs for safety that are part of the umbrella unit of which you're a part. I wonder if you would talk about that a little bit. Officer Wambolt,
sure.
You want to lead off?
Yeah, underneath the crime prevention umbrella, like we talked about earlier, Neighborhood Watch is our biggest program. But besides that, Ron and I give education presentations about senior citizen safety, women's safety. We have several child programs, internet safety, for example, street smarts for kids, identity theft.
I noticed there's something called a Business Watch program on the website. Is that similar to Neighborhood Watch or a different animal?
It's very similar to Neighborhood Watch, not as prevalent. Most businesses do their stuff during the day or at least early in the evening. We like to have Neighborhood Watch working 24/7. So it works in the same fashion. It's just not as it's not as widespread as the Neighborhood Watch program itself is.
Tell us a little bit more about these other crime prevention programs, how they work, gentlemen. Officer Francis?
They're mainly education programs. We go out and we're trying to educate folks. We want them, that common sense and awareness idea. We give that to them. There's another theory that we live by in the crime prevention unit. It's called the crime triangle or the crime equation.
What's that?
If we have any math majors out in the audience, they know that if you take away one part of an equation, you can't get a final answer. Well, in the crime equation, opportunity.
Ability plus desire plus opportunity.
That's what I was trying to say. Equals a crime. So if we can control one of those three components of that equation, whether it's ability, opportunity, or whatever the third
desire.
One is. Desire. Desire. Then we can't come up with the final result. But taking away somebody's desire and ability to harm us or to take our property is very difficult. So all the programs that we do, that Jeff and I do, even Officer Friendly with the little kids programs, is we focus on taking away the opportunity. We want to make I talked about earlier, that hard target. So, for example, every night in the city of Kenosha, you park your car on the street or even in your driveway, we'll get little thugs that'll walk down the streets and they'll try every car door they're coming across. What are they looking for? They're looking for an open car. So how do we take away that opportunity for them to victimize us and take our stuff out of our car? It's really simple.
Lock the car.
We lock the door, exactly. That's what we're talking about. That's a simple example, but there's millions and millions of taking away that opportunity. So,
when you work with adults and senior citizens in those programs, how is that different, and what is it that you talk about?
I love it. The kids programs that we do as a crime prevention unit, if it's not officer friendly, Jeff takes care of those because I don't like doing those. And the reason I don't like doing them, it's simple, because we give suggestions. Everything we're talking about today, if it's an adult audience out there, is a suggestion. You guys can take it or leave it. You're adults. You can make that choice. And the example I'll give you, Jeff talked about having lights, and we talked before the show started, Len, about more people out in your neighborhood turning their lights on outside.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Since we started Neighborhood Watch out in our neighborhood, people are really lighting up like they never have.
Our recommendation is that you light up your houses and your properties like Christmas Lane at Christmas time. And we're talking all four sides, front, back, and both sides of your house. Now, as an adult, I can make a decision, and I got to be honest with you, I don't follow my own advice. If you come to my house, the front and both sides are lit up very nicely, but the back of my house is kind of dark. And you know why? Because my bedroom's in the back of my house. And I tried putting lights up in the back of my house, and it drove me nuts trying to sleep at night.
We'll have to get you blackout shades.
So the fun part for me is being able to tell adults this, and they taking our information and doing what they want with it. You know, if they say Wambolt and Francis are nuts, we're not going to pay attention to them. Well, that's their choice. They get to make that choice. When we teach little kids, when Jeff teaches little kids, or when Officer Friendly's teaching little kids, he's always telling them, don't do this, don't do that, do this, do that. It's not a suggestion anymore. So we give best case scenarios. We give best recommendations, and adults can do what they want with that.
Well, the good news about lighting up the outside of your house is that today it's very cheap to do that. With the LED bulbs are expensive to buy, but they're very cheap to run. But those Curly Q fluorescent bulbs that
we used to get that argument all the time.
They're cheap to buy and cheap to run. What, a 23-watt bulb is bright as 100-watt bulb used to be.
I have no idea because I never checked into it. Because our reply to that, Len, when people would tell us I'm not lighting up my house because it's expensive, what price do you put on your safety?
How expensive is it to be broken into?
Yeah, there you go.
Or worse.
Or worse, yeah, in terms of your own personal safety. Well, since we're talking about homes being broken into suddenly, what do you recommend for home safety? Vacation season is pretty much over. Labor Day weekends are long gone now. Got the holidays coming up soon, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. People are going to be traveling. When you're going to leave your house for a day, 3 days, or a week or two, what sort of precautions do you recommend? Do you recommend having people take care of your house? If people are taking care of your house, should you notify the neighbors or the police department so that they don't think suspicious activity is going on? Do you put on lights? Do you put lights on timers? See all kinds of advice in the magazines and in the newspapers. What do you professionals recommend? Who wants to start?
Well,
Officer Wemble?
Sure. You said a lot there.
I think he covered everything.
How much time we've got left?
He doesn't need us.
Well, here's the thing.
You could explain how you really do those things and why they're important, or whether I'm just raving.
Let me start with this. When we teach burglary prevention, for example, there's several layers to it, starting with the outer layer, which could be the entire neighborhood, right? So we encourage starting a neighborhood watch program because then you've got neighbors looking out for one another.
I've never thought of it in that holistic way. You're like,
right.
You're thinking of it like as an onion. You peel off the layers of the onion, and the biggest part is the neighborhood itself. How cohesive and together is that neighborhood in terms of a sense of community? Okay.
Right. So you got the whole neighborhood watching out for one another. Then bring it in a little closer. What are the streetlights like near your home? Are they working properly? Are they being blocked by the trees? Are the trees cut the way they should be, which is about 9 or 10 feet above the ground? Your bushes should be cut below the windowsill level, you know, that type of thing, allowing clear visibility. What is your own property like? Are you using, similar to what I just talked about, SEPTED techniques? Now, SEPTED stands for Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design, using the environment to help you fight crime. Here's a quick example of that. A rose bush looks beautiful, but if it's placed next to a window, is a burglar going to use that window to climb through your house? No.
Probably not.
Why not?
Too dangerous.
And why?
All those thorns.
The thorns, right? Yeah. You got the thorns. So then we look at, you know, going in even closer. Are you leaving your lights on as the homeowner at night? Are you using secure windows and doors? Are you leaving your doors locked? Do you have an alarm system? Do you have a camera system? Do you have a dog? Are you using, then we go interior, are you using long screws in your frame of your door, making it harder for a would-be burglar to kick in the door? Are you using glass block windows on your, especially your basement windows? Things of that nature. So like you said, it's a holistic approach, starting out with the entire neighborhood, working all the way in to the interior of your own home.
Now, people often worry about the expense of doing something to protect themselves. These things don't sound, except for maybe an alarm system, that there's really any expense associated with them at all.
Not much. There's not much. And a lot of it, like Ron said earlier, it's common sense and awareness of these issues, right? Now, you, when you talked earlier, you said a lot when you were asking about what are all the things we can do with your neighbors, perhaps. If you're going on vacation, we always recommend that you let the mail and the newspaper, if you get those, continue to come to your house. But you ask someone you trust to pick them up. Because here, think of it this way. If you stop the newspaper from coming to your home, you are calling someone to cancel that newspaper, but you're probably talking to a stranger. Now that stranger knows you're going to be gone. Why do that? Let the paper come. Let the mail come, and let a neighbor you trust or a relative you trust pick up the paper and newspaper or in the mail for you.
Now, if you have in the newer neighborhoods a central station where a number of houses pick up their mail, that's a case where you'd probably want to have the post office notified, because otherwise it just...
Okay. Well, normally in the city of Kenosha,
but
we don't have
most
that.
Places but in the new neighborhoods where I live, okay. For example.
You, well, our recommendation would still be that you have a friend or a family member pick up the mail for you.
They'd have to take a key to the mailbox at the
and
corner.
The way we pose it is when we do our meetings, we'll ask them...
But that would keep it secret. I get the point. That would keep it secret.
Right. But what you're doing is, what does a bad guy look like? And when we do our presentations, we usually point at each other.
We don't know.
Exactly. That's the point. So when you're calling the post office and you're telling them you're going to be on vacation for a week, do you know who you're talking to? That's why we recommend that you continue that service and have somebody you trust, somebody you know, pick up the paper, pick up the mail.
Right. And your FedEx and your UPS.
Everything, yeah, exactly. Park cars, have neighbors or family members park cars in your driveway. If it's the wintertime, have them plow or shovel the snow if it snows.
Make sure the grass is cut.
Have them cut the grass, exactly.
And leave them a key. Don't hide a key somewhere around your property because if you know where to hide it, the bad guy knows where to find it. Don't do that.
Yeah, that fake rock isn't going to work.
That doesn't work,
no.
Eh?
Speaking of burglars, when do you think most burglaries take place, Len?
I would say in the evening.
Nope, they take place during the day.
And when people are at work.
When people are not home, exactly. When they're out doing what they need to be doing, either work or school or whatever it is.
A lot of neighborhoods are awfully dead, especially in the areas of town where you have a lot of professionals. The suburban neighborhoods to the west get pretty deserted during the workday. That's
so
true.
That's why we need to make people aware, the folks that are home, that if they see something suspicious, they should be calling the police. And we want folks to make sure that they lock up their homes. You get a beautiful day out and you're going to work. Don't leave your windows open. Close those windows, unfortunately, because that's how burglars are going to get in. And they're going to do it mainly during the daytime.
Well, that's sort of against conventional wisdom. So I think that's really important for us to hit that point. Officer Wambolt, what does go on at night? Something must go on at night. Police are working at night.
Oh, sure. There's all kinds of things going on at night. Anything from curfew violations all the way up to, burglaries and car thefts.
But the point that we're trying to make here is that the daytime burglaries are a real threat. There's a lot of them. And that a good neighborhood watch program of people looking out for each other
can have an impact. To elaborate on what Ron says, most burglaries happen during the day, even though some do happen at night. But if you see a work van in your neighbor's driveway, maybe question it. That could be suspicious. You call the police. Or hopefully your neighbors have talked to each other enough to know that, yes, I'm having work done at my home. There should be a work van in my driveway. Yeah. That's what we'd like to see, building that sense of community, friendship, relationships.
Getting to know your neighbors at least a little bit goes a long way in terms of crime prevention, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, our modern society almost mitigates against that, but that's part of the problem that we need to fight against. Is that right?
That's absolutely. We come home, we drive into our garages, we close the door, and we turn the air conditioners on, we sit in our living rooms, and there goes those devices you talked about earlier.
Well, in the old days.
Whether it's a television or an iPad or whatever it is.
I'm old enough to remember some of the old days, and everyone sat on the front porch. We didn't have air conditioning. We all were on the front porch. We were watching the kids play in the front yard. I was watched when I was playing. It was my grandparents, my uncles, my aunts. Everyone was outdoors, and the streets actually, I think, were much safer in 1955 than they are in 2016, in the sense that people were watching for each other in the neighborhood in a way that you don't see.
Well,
today.
We call that activity. That's another part of target hardening.
Right,
where there's positive activity, crime stays away generally. So, like to your example of your neighborhood where everybody was outside on the front porch, kids are playing. What is the likelihood of a criminal coming into that neighborhood and doing harm while you're outside playing and your family members are outside, including your parents? Very slim. It's
remote.
Not going to happen. Because bad guys, like we talked about earlier, the three things they shy away from, light, noise, and groups. Okay, they're going to go to the shadows. They want to find a desolate area, a place where people don't care. And that's where they'll commit a lot of their, criminal activity.
There's a lot of talk, gentlemen, about bullying, not only in person but online, and I wonder if that comes up in your work with crime prevention and neighborhoods and families.
Yes,
Officer Francis
just dealt with a case of that last week. As a matter of fact, we had a young lady who broke up with her boyfriend, and now he's dating another young lady, and now the one young lady's not happy with the other young lady. So there's some social media stuff going on there. There's some vandalism going on there. So it happens. Yeah, people get upset and they try to lash out in some form or fashion. And try to take advantage of the other person. But most of the time, if we can bring it to the other person's attention or the parent's attention, we're usually okay, and the problem takes care of itself and doesn't need too much law enforcement intervention.
But you do encourage people to make such reports.
Absolutely, yeah. Sometimes it's not going to stop if you just leave it. It won't stop if you just leave it alone. And sometimes it won't stop if you try to intervene. And you brought
and
it up.
Serious. You brought it is serious. People kill themselves over
You brought it up earlier to that point that frivolous complaints, frivolous calls, so-called frivolous. In this day and age, there's no such thing. The police handle just about everything. And some neighbors aren't comfortable walking across the street and confronting another neighbor about an issue. So that's where we get involved. And if it's not the patrol division, that's what our job is. That's what the crime prevention unit does. So we don't mind those phone calls. If you have an issue like that, please call us. We'll try to fix the problem.
Your unit.
Absolutely.
That's why your unit was created. And similar units exist in police forces, departments all around us, of course. This isn't something unique to
Kenosha.
Right,
it's part of community policing.
It's the community policing movement that's really nationwide. There's another thing that we hear people talk about, and that's fear of ATM machines. Not fear they won't have any money from your account, but fear that someone else will be taking money out of your account because they've skimmed your information when you used an ATM. Is that still going on? What kind of safety do you recommend in terms of using ATM machines, John?
Well, identity theft is a huge problem. About 10 million Americans a year are affected by identity theft. And usually what happens is the identity thief is either trying to get your information to steal your money or to get money from you somehow, or he's going directly after your money. Now, the ATM thing that you talked about, Lynn, that's a skimming device, and what that does is it steals the information off of your card when you put it in the machine. And we're going to have to go back to common sense and awareness again. And when we talk about that, we want you to be aware of all your surroundings all the time. So if you walk up to a machine that looks weird, looks like it may have been tampered with, don't use the machine.
Look at that slot.
Or take a closer look at it to make sure that it's not, the skimming devices aren't put on there. That's a lot of the education stuff that we do as far as identity theft and scams. You know, you get the IRS calling you on the phone. Those are all scams.
The IRS will never call you on the phone.
They will never call you on the phone. And we just have to make people aware of that, because the problem with this is these identity thieves normally are not only not in the state of Wisconsin, they're not in the United States. So even though Jeff and I have worked real hard with the city council to try to get that free trip to Jamaica like in February or so to track down an identity thief, that's not going to happen. So if you give them your money, it's going to be gone. We're not going to get it back for you. So there's two types of scams that we talk about. One are the scams that happen on the phone, via email, and sometimes even regular mail. And then there's the scams where they come knocking on your door. You know, the door-to-door salesman that perhaps isn't legit. The home repair people that perhaps are not legit.
They want an advance and then they disappear.
The guy who says he works for the phone company or the gas company or the water department for the city of Kenosha, who aren't legit. Now, those first scams I talked about that come in the mail, email, stuff like that, we want you just to delete it, don't answer the phone, or shred the regular mail. But if people show up at your door, call the police.
Okay. We'll remember that. This has been a great and informative program. I want to thank my guests, Officers Jeff Wambolt and Ron Francis from the Neighborhood Watch and community crime prevention programs of the Kenosha Police Department. I'd like to get one more chance for people to get the phone number and the URL. The phone number to call for you is?
Sure, it's 657-3937. 657-3937, and our URL, watch@kenoshapolice.com.
Thank you very much. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, encouraging you to get informed, get involved, roll up your sleeves, call these gentlemen, and work with Neighborhood Watch in Kenosha or in your community. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online recording of today's show, log on to WGTD's website at WGTD.org, click Talk, and go to Community Matters. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD HD. Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. WGTD's Morning Show. Insightful questions put each week to the nation's top authors.
Those are great questions. It always makes for a better interview, for at least for the author, when the interviewer has actually read the book.
You're such a good interviewer, my gosh.
You really made me think. You really read the book.
Yeah. No other interviewer has really gotten into that. You really brought out